And then Kennedy, in a fashion that has also become traditional, Councilmember Kennedy, immediately moved for a recess to cool everything out and kind of remove the focus of the media and the people at home from what was going on at council. They did this when I was arrested. They had me arrested during recess, so people couldn't see me being arrested. That's true, it did make the Sentinel, but the lawsuit that I did didn't make the Sentinel at all. Although, if you go to the Green Press, you'll be able to read about the lawsuit. That's in the Santa Cruz Comic News. You can fight City Hall is the article, and you can check that out in the current issue of the Santa Cruz Comic News. But as I said, this woman who was harassed by the city council, not allowed to speak, not allowed to finish what she was saying, what she was trying to say, this is a typical kind of process that happens at city council, and that's wrong. It just is simply wrong. I mean, it's also true that if we made all the corrections in the world, we'd still have a horrible city council, and we probably still would get very little done. But the fact that they are acting so arrogantly as to deny people even the teeny tiny bit of public comment that they're supposed to be allowed under the Constitution and the council rules is the reason that I'm in court with this lawsuit. And also, I would like to see a movement growing in our community, particularly as the elections come around, where people are going to be demanding that real issues be addressed. Rent control, to me, real issues. I've got some real issues, and others, I'm sure you out there have issues yourselves. Affordable housing, basic civil rights for all of us, including homeless people and renters, rent control, community control of police, an end to this university gobbling up of housing that's going on, and numerous other issues that I brought up on the show. So we've got you in the studio here, Lydia, and I've been ranting on. Any comments on any of this?
Yeah, one thing about the city council. I remember a couple of years ago.
Oh, yeah. Whoops. When Emily Riley was up for election, and I saw her little thing in the paper how she started her bakery, you know, selling cookies, you know, one by one, and she basically said that she was against the sleeping ban, and it really has been pissing me off, to say the least, how she's gone against everything I voted for her, you know, for.
Yeah, she... Emily Riley has not only gone against the sleeping ban, but she was eloquently against the sleeping ban and persistently against the sleeping ban, and actually joined the Crone Crapper Commission, as I call it, the Councilmember Crone's task force on bathrooms, to set up bathrooms, which they never did. They set up some porta potties that are now being pulled out, some of them, for homeless people, and they never got the bathrooms into the industrial zones where they were supposed to. So instead, we get this kind of really horrible bigoted letter, which I mentioned before, from Don Hubbard of the Harvey West Association. But yeah, Emily Riley is an example of a person who completely turns around while she's in office. And my lawsuit won't do anything about that. But my lawsuit will mean that you'll at least be able to talk for 3 minutes about it without getting cut off. I don't know what that's worth, but it just seems so outrageous.
It's important. It's important.
Hi, you're on free radio.
Hello, Robert.
Yeah, is this Steve Argue?
Yeah, I have some issues.
You do, do you? You got to talk real loud. We have a horrible board here, and we can't...
Actually, I've been hearing you saying that all night.
But
it comes through pretty good.
Oh, okay, well, then maybe... Then, I guess I can't...
It's a little lower than, you know, the...
Okay. Well, I should introduce you, Steve. You actually were one of the poor chumps who ran against the city council in 2000, and you actually didn't do too badly, but you didn't win, and you didn't have much of a campaign because you didn't have a lot of support, and it wasn't as well organized as it could have been. But
it
you
wasn't
were
very organized, but I did have a lot of support.
Yeah, I mean, I'm talking about more organizational support.
Right.
Yeah, and you also were homeless at the time, so you were trying to do a number of things, and you weren't a heroin user, were you, Steve?
Heroin.
Okay, we have been talking about heroin on the air here, trying to, you know, bring things up to date. Have you been listening to the show?
Yes, I have.
What do you think?
Well, in terms of heroin?
Well, in terms of anything you wanted to say, but just... I hope you've been enjoying the show, is what I've been saying.
Yeah, it's been a very good show.
Okay.
And I agree, you know, in terms of... the whole issue of the drug war came up during the campaign. And what I put forward was this proposal that put it as their lowest priority.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really what needs to be done on a local level, something that can be done. You know, you can't really change state law or federal law. Well, you can push for that, but in terms of being in office there, these so-called progressives in office, they could do something like that. They could say, hey, this is the law. You can't really change that law in our position. You can't pass something. But we can say this is our lowest priority. We're not going to go out and victimize drug users just for victims of crime.
Now, are you in town, or?
No, but I'm on my way there.
Really?
Actually, I'm headed out to Washington, D.C. this weekend for a big protest there against the war drive and U.S. support for Israel.
And that's going to be when?
On April 20th, and there's also going to be a sister demonstration in San Francisco on the same day.
You know what time? I don't see the flyer here either, unfortunately.
I could call you back.
Actually, I do. It's actually Saturday the 20th, 11 a.m. Dolores Park, and I believe there's a caravan leaving from the town clock at 9 a.m. on Saturday morning, for those who are interested. And I know also, by the way, that for those who are interested, there's going to be a Huff is turning out, hopefully, in small but mighty numbers to support the 5 to 6 p.m. picketing that's going on here in Santa Cruz every Friday from 5 to 6 at Water and Ocean. That's near the courthouse. It's on that same corner, the block there. So show up between 5 and 6. Sorry, Steve, go ahead.
What's that picketing?
That's going to be picketing against the war on terrorism, the war, the terrorist war, I should say, on various foreign populations, as well as on the domestic population. And I would also add against the homeless in Santa Cruz, because you have a continuing use of laws that violate basic human rights, as you pointed out so rightly in your 2000 campaign.
What kind of turnout have you gotten at those demonstrations?
I have actually, I'm ashamed to confess, I have not been to one of these peace picketings, and that's why I'm going to be going.
But you're promoting it anyway.
I am promoting it. I'll be there tomorrow. If I'm not, then come and grab me. You have my permission. Whoever you are, and that's just not just you, Steve, but anyone out there. I know that a lot of people have been dedicated, and it's a small thing. I've actually promoted it before. But we need, and we've had virtually no real peace activism here in Santa Cruz that I've seen. There's been an upsurge of pro-Israeli government stuff going on at the town clock the last couple days, which is sad for me to watch. But anyway, so what's happening with you that you want to tell us about, or any reactions that you have for the show?
Well, I just was listening, and I just wanted to let you know I was listening. It's been a great show, and I was amazed at a lot of what I've heard.
Where are you calling from?
From Minneapolis.
Wow. I know that our internet capacity, and that's it, by the way, for all you internet buffs, www.microradio.net/FRSC.
You know, there's an easier way to do it.
Uh-huh.
Just what I do is the Yahoo search engine. I get that up, and I just put FRSC in, and Free Radio Center shows up, and just click on it.
Wow.
Jennifer, dear listener.
Oh ho! Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, Jennifer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good show.
Well, listen, thank you, and I hope you're both coming out, and we can talk some more.
Yep, definitely.
Okay, thank you.
Bye.
And I want to thank Lydia for being with us. She's about to leave. Goodbye, Lydia. Thanks again.
Bye.
Say that again.
Bye.
Hey. Thank you. And Lydia's actually going to get her paper to us on drug use later. We can look it over and see if it's airworthy. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, and it looks like we have another caller.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Robert.
Hey there.
Hey, I literally heard not one word of what Steve had to say, and I had my radio on full blast.
Yeah, I was afraid of that. I mean,
okay.
Yeah, I'm having trouble with this board here.
You were right. It ain't working good, but...
Well, just keep shouting shouting real loud.
Okay.
Louder.
Take care.
All right.
And we have another phone call coming in. Maybe we can correct this problem.
Hi, you're on Free Radio, we hope.
Yeah. Hey, this is Steve.
Hey, Hey, Steve, talk real loud.
All right. Hello, audience.
That's good. Keep it up.
Well, so, you know, we have Earth Day coming up this Sunday where we're going to have a hunger and homelessness booth at the Earth Day Festival San Lorenzo Park starting at 11 a.m.
Okay, so I'll repeat what you're saying just in case people can't hear that. That's 11 a.m. San Lorenzo Park, Sunday, April 21st, Earth Day, and we're talking with Steve Weiss of Huff UCSC. Shout out some more, Steve.
Well, we also have our meetings at the Student Center, which is Thursdays, 6:30 p.m.
And actually, that would be happening right now, right?
Actually, we're all done.
And did you have anybody show up at that meeting?
No.
Bummer. Well, is there a phone number? I guess people can
give you a call. I'm going to talk through the mic here, so at least people can hear half this conversation if they can't hear you. At 427-0270, I believe that's your number, right, Steve?
Yes.
He says yes. You got to have a translator.
My translator, right?
So, are you? What's happening on campus? I know you had a number of projects with CalPERG. We had a homeless man come to our last Huff meeting on Wednesday, which, for those of you who are interested, Huff meets off campus Wednesday 8:30 at Baker's Square. We had quite a large meeting. People are in the process of planning the homeless summit, which is going to be happening May 3rd through 4th. It's actually the Right to Sleep Summit, as we call it, which is going to get tent cities from up and down the coast, as well as hopefully activists who will reach a critical mass in Santa Cruz and then explode out onto the streets and produce meaningful change in our social situation here. And Steve, you'll be there leading the charge.
Of course. With tent in hand.
With a tent in hand. And that's not just a tentative comment, right?
Right.
So, yeah. Wow.
And you're gonna be showing up at Earth Day, right?
And I will be showing up at Earth Day at that's at what time does this booth start?
It starts at 11 a.m.
Well, my show lets out at 1:30.
That's why you got me on your team.
And you are gonna be making sure that Scott Kennedy and Crone do not control the scene there. That the Earth Day is not hijacked by a bunch of reformist politicians, right?
if that's what they are.
Indeedy. Anything happening on campus around your anti-homeless laws up there? I know that you were assigned the sacred trust of looking into the project of who controls those crazy campus laws that make it illegal to sleep in your vehicle after dusk.
Right.
And you're still probing that issue, I'll bet.
Yes.
You've sent out your minions to get intelligence, and as yet, the word hasn't come back.
Well, actually, I was curious what was happening to Jeremiah.
Jeremiah, actually, you're asking about Jeremiah. Jeremiah is a guy who's gotten two trespass tickets, and apparently he was also charged, I looked at his file, with obstructing an officer at UCSC, and I guess he was trying to help with some food preparation deal that was going on campus. He is in connection with activist Becky Johnson, who's apparently working on that issue with him, and we intend to, he has a hearing on May 2nd, and it's a pre-trial hearing. I checked that for sure, and then he's defending himself. He doesn't have a public defender, or a pretender, as some of us call it. He's doing his own public defending, and needs your support. I'd suggest showing up at, I think it's either 9:30 or 10, like I think it's 10, on May 2nd. That's going to be on the Friday, on the Thursday before the Friday where we have the three-day Right to Sleep Summit, which is going to be quite a gathering. We're getting more and more indication that there's large groups coming from San Francisco and Berkeley, significant groups coming from Santa Barbara, San Jose, possibly from Las Vegas. I'm waiting for a call-in from Brother David, who may be giving a call into the show. Although maybe not. We'll see what happens with that. He may be out there fighting to make sure the police don't beat up homeless people.
Well, let me ask you this. Did you hear about the demonstration going on at Dolores Park in San Francisco this Saturday?
I did. I actually just announced that on April 20th, we have a delegation leaving from the carpooling, actually, from the town clock. It's going to be a protest, the real axis of evil, war, racism, and poverty.
Right.
And I also should mention that on May 1st, there's going to be a May Day deal at the Loudon Nelson Park, or Laurel Park, as some call it. That's going to be running, I think, from at least from 4 to dusk. It may actually run earlier. I'm not quite sure. And perhaps somebody from, it's a Communist Party function down here. It's also got other people, guest speakers, Nora Hockman, Scott Kennedy, and Robert Norse, if you can think of a more diverse group. I can't. So, pretty exciting stuff.
Yeah, definitely. Well, hey, just, you know, keep up the good work, and I will see you. I might see you in San Francisco.
Hey, could be, or possibly you'll see me on Earth Day.
Awesome.
Yeah, pretty surely you'll see me on Earth Day.
Definitely. In fact, I need to get some materials from you at some point this week.
Call me up.
All right, cool.
All right.
Thanks.
You are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz. I hope you heard some of that conversation. I tried to kind of convey it. We have an inept programmer trying to struggle with a new Yamaha mixing console board, which was put in by our crackerjack technical expert, Skidmark Bob. Looks like the phones are ringing off the hook, and of course we can't hear anybody, but let's see what we can do. We hope you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
This is Dead Air, brought to you by the Seaside Company.
You got to talk real loud to be on our Dead Air, man.
Doesn't matter if I talk loud or not, you need to hail an engineer, Robert.
I think an engineer is arriving, even okay, as we speak.
You need to talk way back here, like this. You need to have this.
Up, like that, and talk into the mic. Hold the phone away from your mouth.
I've just received some exciting instructions, and I think we're going to be able to make it here. I need to send you the earphones, too.
That's the best thing you could do.
This is called on-air training here. Don't go away.
7 years, still hasn't figured it out.
Hey, you never will.
All right, let's see here. Hang on there, caller.
He's still got his training wheels on.
Well, the earphones don't seem to work too well, but go ahead. What's happening, Carl? You were going to make some comments.
Rambled on about 5 minutes about this 200-page document and never said what's inside the document.
Oh, good
point. I'd like to hear a little bit about that, if you can
sure.
Kind of leave the asides out of it and just tell us what the document says. There must be something in there. You know, 200 pages, there's got to be something.
Now, you would think so, wouldn't you? Would you like me to do it on the air?
Give us a synopsis of what this 200 pages is about.
Okay, well, actually,
okay,
you
talk
to
you later.
On the line? Okay. I'm still not entirely clear, in spite of the timely intervention by the infamous V-Man, but I'm going to be working on it. I'm going to give those documents. But first, this phone call. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hello.
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm good. Who's this?
This is Romito.
Hey, Romito. What's new?
Oh, I heard your broadcast on KSCO.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, I did speak on KSCO twice.
As a
I talked on
fact,
Friday and today, too.
They're bleeding through our signal, so pod down your phone pod there. Turn it down.
Turn it down?
Yeah.
Okay. How's that? How we doing? Any better?
Yeah, it's better.
Okay. This is what we call teamwork here at Free Radio. Okay.
Now, can you hear me?
I can hear you, although I'm not using the earphones because I get massive bleeding when I try to listen through the earphones, but...
Yeah. No, you got to use earphones. That's the only way you'll figure out what's going on.
Well, I'm listening to you kind of through the phone itself, though. I'm having to do a. Well, I'm managing. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
Any comments on anything you've heard or anything you want to say?
I think your guest is doing a good job.
Well, thank you. Now you should tell that to the rest of the programmers and have them, you know, bake me a cake or do something. I think we should file a complaint with the FCC about KSCO. I mean, they are a problem. But I did get on twice on Steve Hartman's show.
Yeah.
And I'll be talking more about that. Maybe I should get off the phone line.
Yeah.
Anything you want to conclude with?
No. You're doing a good job there, and keep it up.
Thanks. Appreciate it, Romito.
Bye.
So, apparently... numerous phone line problems, ranging from programmer ignorance to the overweening power of KSCO. What I've got in hand here is a motion to dismiss from the City Council. And that is, of course, the City Council's attorney, John Barisoni. This is the same guy who was puzzling so hard about what to charge me after I'd been arrested. Normally, police don't haul you away until they get a charge. But you see, in the case of the Santa Cruz City Council, they arrest first and then charge you. And that's an interesting approach. Of course, it's unconstitutional. Should be the basis for a reversal. And it should be the basis for civil damages. But we'll see if that actually works. What are they saying in response? Well, they are saying that that they are not guilty of any indiscretions whatsoever, that the entire lawsuit that is against them is groundless. Why? Well, first they say that council members are absolutely immune from any lawsuits. They say that the City Council's rules are not unconstitutional. The rules, you may know, is that City Council has decorum rules. It says each person who addresses the council, you're not allowed to make personal, impertinent, slanderous remarks or be boisterous. So there's a couple of other phrases that are in the so-called decorum rules of the City Council. And they try to compare this with the rules of another City Council in the city of Norwalk, where that city, someone challenged those rules and the court upheld the rules. What they don't mention, of course, is that somebody there actually disrupted the meeting. I didn't disrupt the meeting. I made a silent gesture. They disrupted their own meeting because they were so determined to spread fear among people that no one would make any kind of gestures whatsoever that offended Councilmember Fitzmaurice. That seemed to be the injunction of the hour, the need of the inept and rather submissive Mayor Crone, who seems to be, dare I say it, taking his orders from Fuhrer Fitzmaurice. I don't want to be arrested in the studio, but I mean, that would be kind of how I would put it, that the real power on the Santa Cruz City Council does not lie with Crone anymore. It lies with Fitzmaurice. It lies with Kennedy. Perhaps it lies with Sugar. Who knows? Maybe Crone is getting back a little of his power. He seemed to be kind of taking back some of his power at the last meeting. I wasn't at the last meeting, but that's what I heard. Although, it's hard to tell. You can't really judge from one meeting. What else is being said in this document that where they're replying? They're looking to have all charges dismissed against the City Council. They have the thing essentially a summary dismissal. They claim that I was properly ejected from the meeting, and they have an interesting argument here. They claim that it wasn't because of a nasty Nazi salute. It was because the salute was not made during oral communications. So it wasn't really a communication. It was an inappropriate communication at a non-oral communications time. And if you follow this logic, any signs held up during the meeting, not during oral communication, would be illegal. Any gestures from the audience would be the basis for a reprimand, and if the person didn't cease doing it or leave the room, an arrest. And, of course, that's preposterous. So what we got are, we have a 200-page document filled with preposterous arguments. But, of course, they don't want to be held liable, so they're grasping at whatever they can find. What else have we got in this defense of the City Council's behavior? They're claiming, quite properly, that City Council is not the same kind of forum, let's say, that a city park might be or that a sidewalk might be, because City Council is engaged in business. They're doing things that have to get done. And therefore, for example, you can't interrupt, you can't go on at great length, you have to abide by the time requirements, you have to be pertinent in your comments in terms of staying on topic, all of which I agree with. Business has to be conducted at City Council, and wouldn't it be nice if they actually did do some business at City Council? The problem, of course, is that they are saying that I disrupted the council meeting, but they're not indicating how a silent gesture from the audience, which isn't even seen by the mayor, is a disruption. And that, of course, is their problem. It is preposterous, and it's an even greater problem because it's on videotape. And I remind people who are listening who haven't seen this, go to the web, that's our free radio web. Go to www.santacruz.indymedia.org, and you'll actually see this arrest, and you'll see me giving this Heil Crone salute, silent, from the side, and you'll see me being taken away in handcuffs. not during the public period. Councilmember Kennedy made sure of that. He had this council recessed so that it wouldn't be done on the public record. And then in the next 2 weeks later, when I tried to have the record amended to say that I was arrested by Councilmember Crone, Kennedy had that struck. So the attempt is to conceal this from the community as to what's going on. And, of course, that doesn't work. It isn't going to be concealed. It's going to get broader and broader, and the scandal is going to get louder and louder as we proceed, particularly if you out there who have felt chilled by the city council come forward and give declarations. And what that means, essentially, is writing a page or two about your story and swearing that it actually happened, that you did feel intimidated when you heard about this incident or some other incident at city council, when you saw it on television, or when you were present when something else that was a violation of people's First Amendment rights happened. That's what we need to bring our city government back in some kind of conformance, even with its own rules. And its own rules are pretty bad, I got to tell you. There's no way for people to get things on the agenda unless you're a buddy of one of these council members, or unless you can get 39,000 votes at a special election, you know, or at a general election, and more than that at a special election. It's really hard to get any kind of real democratic process. But to retain the shreds of the democratic process we have, you need to come forward. Call 423-HUFF, 423-4833. If you have at any time in the past 3 years felt the city council was out of line, not just because they don't mind it if homeless people have no basic human rights and refuse to address issues and have their own homeless issues task force come forward with recommendations that they completely ignore, that they let dozens of homeless people die each year without allowing the kind of encampments that might save them, that we're going to be talking about May 3rd to 5th. Not even those issues, but those are important ones. But just at city council itself, you see them acting abusively, abruptly, cutting off people, refusing them basic constitutional right to speak, threatening them with arrest. There's a whole record of that. Now, again, what else is in this rather empty document, long empty document? Most of the document is taken up by, they itemize every single instance where I was in the city council and spoke to the city council, but supposedly to show that I knew what the policies of the city council were. And therefore, I couldn't say it was a surprise when they said, get out of the room because you made a Nazi salute, because Mayor Fitzmaurice, when he was mayor, told you had to leave if you were going to do that. And my response is, yeah, sure. I mean, I know what Mayor Fitzmaurice says. He says a lot of things. You know, he has a right to his opinion. But he doesn't have a right to essentially abrogate other people's rights to express their opinion, provided the council is not being disrupted. If Fitzmaurice chooses to disrupt the council, maybe they should arrest him instead of me. I mean, I guess Crone didn't think of that one. I mean, I think it's a pretty good idea. But, you know, it apparently didn't occur to him. But that... whoever disrupts the council is the person who's responsible. And I'm afraid when the council disrupts itself and then tries to blame people in the audience, unpopular critics like myself, that's something that we have to make sure they don't do. And it also becomes, when it's done visibly, it becomes a way to essentially jujitsu them and make them start paying some real attention to even their own rules, keeping their own rules. What else? Well, they also claim that the Nazi salute is inappropriate because it offends matters, it offends people who are victims of the Holocaust, or and it's also a scurrilous personal attack on council members. I mean, all this is reaching very, very far. The men who created this document, who got thousands of dollars for drawing it up, if you consider, I don't know, $250, $300 an hour you must get, it must take an hours to draw up, 200 pages long. His name is George Kovacevic. He is also the man who advised Sergeant Baker back in January that Matisse Selman could have me arrested for setting up a table on the sidewalk in front of the New Leaf Market when I was engaged in petitioning to make sure that Matisse Selman and Ali Kov, those two kiosks, did some mediating instead of simply privatizing the sidewalk and setting up a huge obstructive fence and driving away the young people. And of course, we didn't succeed in that one, folks, but we certainly raised the issue. But what George Kovacevich, who's an assistant city attorney, did was he advised Matisse Selman, the owner of Sushi Now, that I was in violation of the obstructing the sidewalk law when my little table obstructed all of one-fifth of the sidewalk, which is, of course, preposterous. Again, Kovacevich specializes in this kind of stuff, I'm afraid. I mean, I know him personally. He's a nice guy. I mean, it's interesting how many of these people are very amiable and intelligent, articulate, and so forth. But when they get into the service of city business or county business or police business, they become a menace, a menace to society, although they're, of course, paid by society to do what they're doing. And Kovacevich was the evil genius behind the whole attack on activist Jerry Henry out of the Aptos Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center. There have been some very articulate and passionate and well-written letters by Jerry Henry's friend Scott Rhodes in The Good Times, in The Metro, and in The Sentinel about how Jerry Henry, who's a sort of a minister gadfly who is advising people who are using heroin, actually, out at Aptos and getting them off of heroin, actually, and advising them of their constitutional rights not to be harassed by the coffee roasting company and the sheriff's substation out there at the Rancho Del Mar and Gottschalk's, that they could be out there even though they were young teenagers and they had a right to be in those public spaces. They went after him viciously. They got injunctions, as they tried to do with me at the farmer's market unsuccessfully and at City Hall. And I had better legal help at the time, perhaps, or maybe more witnesses, or maybe they, you know, overreached with me so far that it was, you know, didn't go too well. They've tried to enjoin me, as I may remind you, back in the coffee clutch. But anyway, Kovacevich, the man who wrote this report, went after Jerry Henry and spent, God, I don't know, tens of thousands, more than $100,000 to have Henry barred from the Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center. He's still appealing that case. We've talked about that case on the air. He's had some of the charges overturned. What it really amounts to is businesses deciding that not only can't you go into their businesses unless you're the kind of person they want, but also if you engaging in any political activity outside their businesses, they can stop you from doing that too by claiming that you are trespassing with intent to interfere with the business. And Kovacevich has been a person, a city attorney, who has assisted, and a district attorney at times, who has assisted the merchants in doing this. And he's apparently felt it's his job to assist Matisse Selman downtown, because that's what he did. It's in the police report. And I thought those charges had been dropped. They have not been dropped. They are back again. I've been charged with obstructing the sidewalk. I will be going to court unless the charges get dropped. And perhaps Zoe Einbinder, who was arrested with me, will also be going to court. She had thought the charges were dropped. I still haven't gotten a clear signal on that one yet. Anyway, Kovacevich has this long document. He also claims that all council members are immune from their suit because they were performing discretionary duties. They did not violate a clearly established constitutional right of which a reasonable person would have known. The purpose of the qualified immunity defense is to permit government officials to consciously undertake their responsibilities without fear they will be held liable for actions that appear reasonable at the time but are later held to violate statutory or constitutional rights. How anyone could believe that Mayor Crone could say with a straight face that I was disrupting a meeting by a silent gesture that lasted 2 seconds is really preposterous. And it's sinister that hundreds, if not thousands, of dollars of taxpayer money are being spent on this kind of legal dispute. Crone should apologize for what he did. He should revamp those decorum rules. He should, in essence, surrender and acknowledge the fact that he made a big boo-boo. I mean, that's what I would have done if I were him. I mean, it's not going to stop me from claiming damages, but in order to preserve his reputation as a fair individual, as a fair public official, he needs to come clean on this matter. Instead, he's hiding behind John Barrasoni, the city attorney. He's got this sort of generic email that he keeps sending out. And I'm scrambling to find it. I don't know if I will at this moment or in time. But in essence, is saying, Mr. Norris, I was arrested for disrupting a public meeting, and that's sort of the long and the short of it. And his claim, of course, is ridiculous. If you go to the website www.santacruzindymedia.org, because you'll find no disruptions at all. You just find the city council trying to exercise naked power to intimidate a critic and to intimidate people watching. It's not just me. I mean, you know, I have a thicker skin than many because I've been doing this for so long and probably too thin a skin still. But people watching are not going to exercise their constitutional rights if they know they have to risk going to jail or being publicly humiliated by Crone, Fitzmaurice, Sugar, Kennedy, Premack, Porter, or Riley, or, you know, Rotkin or Matthews when they come back into power, as they may well do after this next election. So it's our job as a community to say there's got to be some lines, and the federal court is going to tell you you can't do this. So anyway, it's a long document. I'll probably talk to the person who called in personally and give him a copy of the document so he can examine it at more leisure. A lot of it is very technical and talks about, would a reasonable official in the defendant's position know their conduct was unconstitutional? And he says, oh no, we wouldn't have known. You wouldn't have known that ordering a person away from a public meeting and claiming with a straight face that they're disrupting the meeting for a silent gesture is not reasonable behavior for a public official? I think you would have known that. And it's completely unreasonable for a sleazy attorney to put this kind of stuff into a document and claim it in any way. I mean, it's... I say sleazy because this is pretty sleazy stuff, George, I got to tell you. And if George Kovacevic is listening and wants to come on the show and defend himself, hey, I'll give him some spare time and he can make his case. There's no defense for this kind of stuff. It's outrageous. It is trying to cover your ass. They're also trying to cover the ass of Sergeant Baker. Sergeant Baker made this arrest. Sergeant Baker is otherwise immune from suit under the doctrine of qualified immunity, according to this, because Sergeant Baker's conduct did not violate clearly established constitutional rights of which a reasonable officer would know, he is immune from suit under the doctrine of qualified immunity. The qualified immunity standard is even lower than that which exists for the determination of probable cause. Under the qualified immunity standard, Sergeant Baker is immune from suit if reasonable officers in his position could have disagreed on this issue of probable cause. In order to allow for this room for error, the qualified immunity standard is even lower than that of probable cause, and this right more defined more narrowly than the constitutional provision guaranteeing it. An officer can be immune from a false arrest claim even if probable cause for the arrest was not present and rights were actually violated. This is horrible if it's true, but even if it's true, I don't think that. It's really quite clear because Baker is staring right at me as I give this salute and does absolutely nothing. Hence, he has no basis for believing there was probable cause or even that other people would believe there was probable cause for me to be arrested. His proper response, at the very, very most, would be to say, Mayor Crone has ordered me to make a citizen's arrest of you, Robert. Here, sign this form. And then you'll take it up in court later and continue with the meeting. It could have been done. He could have claimed I was disrupting a meeting and then taken it to court later, and if the DA had chosen to prosecute it, which he didn't, of course, because there was no disruption. But instead, he had me hauled away from that meeting. And Baker didn't do this, I think, he might have done it on the orders of his superior, but Baker, this is the third occasion Baker has taken me into a custody in handcuffs, taking me out of the police station or the jail on two occasions were infractions, and all three occasions were citizen complaints, which were later dismissed by the court completely, not even filed. Baker could have, in all three of these cases, simply filled out a form and had me sign it, and I would have done that. I had no problem with that. Instead, and I think it was vindictive on his part because I have exposed his bad behavior towards bicyclists, homeless people, women downtown, musicians, panhandlers. He's got a very bad record over the last year, and I mean, that doesn't even go back further when we could talk about some really nasty stuff, and I have, but we can put that aside. Baker saw there was no probable cause. It was his obligation to take a citizen's complaint from Crone, yes, but not to have me arrested and taken into custody. No, he was wrong. And the problem, of course, is will the courts uphold that? We'll see. The question, though, for you is, what do you do at City Council when the City Council member says, Mr. So-and-so, you are in violation of our decorum rules, leave the room? What can your response be? Well, I have been doing some legal research on this issue. I'm going to look into my bag of tricks and come out with some thoughts. And while I'm looking into that bag of tricks, we're going to hear a little more of Guido Serpentino, and I'll be right back. Actually, let's make that Guido Serpentino is a little further away than I'd like. Let's hear a little of my favorite Just Kidding number from Phil Free, Mayor's Lawn. On the other hand, perhaps that disc needs a little reworking, so we're going to have to wait on that one. Boy, when it comes in storms here at the studio. I'm just going to dig into my bag, and as I do, I'll remind you that you can get in touch with this station and actually be a part of the dialogue and cut my monologue short by calling 427-3772, 427-FRSC, and you can actually join the fun, so to speak. And let's see what I've got here. I've got police reports. Aha, this is it. There are two code sections that I think are very significant, and they're part of our penal code, which you can find online by going to California Penal Code with a Google or other search engine. And section 142A is very interesting, and it says, any peace officer who has the authority to receive or arrest a person charged with a criminal offense and willfully refuses to receive or arrest such person shall be punished by a fine not exceeding $10,000 or imprisonment in the state prison or in a county jail not exceeding 1 year or by both such fine and imprisonment. So if we had a fair system, that is the charge that Sergeant Baker would be facing, and Officer Brandt as well, because I made two attempts to have a citizen's complaint and arrest made against Mayor Crone after I had been arrested on the preposterous charge of disrupting a meeting and dragged away from that meeting in handcuffs. Both these officers refused to take that complaint. They claimed it was a civil complaint, but it's not. And why it's not? Why isn't it? Well, because Mayor Crone violated this section, 148.5A. Every person who reports to any peace officer, district attorney, or deputy district attorney that a felony or misdemeanor has been committed, knowing the report to be false, is guilty of a misdemeanor. It is hard to believe that Mayor Crone did not know that it was false to report that there was an act of disrupting a public meeting, when there was no such disruption other than a demand, an unconstitutional demand by another council member, that a member of the public be expelled from the room. So Crone was violating the law, and I had a perfect right to demand his arrest. That doesn't mean he would be dragged off in handcuffs, but he would be forced to sign an appearance in court form. And it was the obligation of the police officer who was arresting me to take that complaint and to serve that form on the mayor, just as it was his obligation to serve the mayor's complaint on me. It was not his obligation to take me away in handcuffs, however, nor would it be his obligation to take the mayor away in handcuffs. He could make a judgment as to whether he thought a real crime was occurring. And obviously, Baker didn't think a crime was occurring when I was standing there giving this brief Heil Crone salute, or he would have taken me away on his own initiative. He didn't do that. So, what can you do if Mayor Crone or Councilmember Fitzmaurice or Emily Riley decide that, you know, they'd rather not have you in the meeting because they find you indecorous in your behavior? Well, you can say, and be careful to be very, very moderate in how you proceed. First of all, you can go up to the podium and you can address the City Council and you can ask for a reversal of their ruling. That's something you can do. You can ask the entire council to vote on it. Secondly, what you can do is, if you're about to be arrested, you can say, well, you won't be about to be arrested. They'll ask you to leave the room. if you're really bold, you can go up to the police officer and say, I would like to make a citizen's arrest of the individual who's demanding I leave the room. They're engaging in essentially a pattern and practice of repression here. That's actually probably carrying things too far too early. What you want to do, I think, I'm still really working this out, and I invite people to come up with some creative solutions. The minute that you are told you have to leave the room, and the minute you are threatened with arrest, that is the time when you say, am I being arrested by a police officer on his initiative or her initiative, or am I being arrested on a citizen's complaint? If I'm being arrested on a citizen's complaint, I wish to file a counter-complaint right now that there's a false report going on here, because I'm not breaking any laws. I'm not disrupting a public assembly. Now, this means you cannot, of course, stand up and make long speeches, even though you might be able to do that in the park. You can't do that in city council. You have to respect the time limits. You have to respect the pertinency requirement, too. But if you do all these things and you are still shut off, then the individual who is shutting you down, and would have to be the mayor, I suppose, is engaging in a false report if he is claiming that you're disrupting a meeting. He's disrupting his own meeting. So that's my non-legal advice. I'm not a lawyer. I just read the penal code, and I recommend you look at penal code 142A and 148.5A, because that's what I'm going to be carrying with me the next time I go back to city council. Because unfortunately, we can't wait for federal courts to protect our rights. It just takes too long. We have to be able to assert our rights in the interim, and I think that's what we need to do. And so I encourage you to think about that, but also in this shameless appeal for you to help me out, because I need your declarations that you have seen city council flummery happening. You've seen repression going on at city council. You need to give me a call if you want to see this stopped. If you want to see the city council held accountable in federal court, you've got to help. And that's 423-HUFF, 423-4833 is the number to call. Again, I want to remind people that tomorrow is a peace picketing that's going on between 5 and 6 at Ocean and Water Street, and we have a caller at Ocean and Water, I should say. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Yes, this is Brother David Buer calling from Las Vegas, Nevada.
Oh, Brother David, can you hear me?
Yes.
Excellent. Are you able to tune in the show?
No.
Okay, and Brother David, you are in Las Vegas.
Yes, I am.
And you have been working to protect the rights of homeless people that have been under rather high-profile attack.
There has been a lot of harassment. There seems to be a policy of making it very harsh on the streets for the people who don't fit into a particular program. This has been occurring at the time of a situation where we have less shelter beds than we had, say, a year ago because of some construction work being done at Catholic Charities.
Mm-hmm.
So we have less shelter beds, so therefore there are more people on the streets who would go into a shelter if there was one. And so then these people are also being harassed. So basically, in all cities, you have basically two type of people who are homeless, those who are homeless by choice and those who are homeless not by choice. And because of the lack of beds right now, we have a lot more out there who are not out there by choice, and they're doing the best they can. We had a situation last week where we had put a porta potty up for some guys camping out on one of the streets, and the city forced the removal of that porta potty, so they have to walk 8/10 of a mile at night to use the bathroom.
So the city is actually saying it would prefer to have people crap in the gutter than give them the civility of a porta potty.
Not only, I wouldn't quite put it that way, but that's true. And not only that, though, they complain because the people then do create problems of waste in that, female waste, because that's what happened on Foremaster.
How big is Las Vegas?
I'm sorry?
How large is Las Vegas?
The Las Vegas area has 1.2 million people, and according to studies, 6,000 to 7,000 homeless people.
Mm-hmm.
But what we found out is that if we had just a little bit more shelter beds, those who wanted shelter could access it. We're looking forward to the opening of the Catholic Charities facility in August, and when that opens, it should take some pressure off. But
how many,
it still won't be enough, especially as we face the winter weather once
again.
How
many shelter beds will that be?
They will have a total of about 900 beds on site, but of which 200 are free beds. then there would be 195 that would be $5 a night beds, mm-hmm. and there would be 465 work program beds, as well as something like 60 beds, I believe, in that's transitional housing kind of apartments.
So, Brother David, are you telling me that there are 4,500 homeless people who would prefer to be outside, or?
No, when I did the survey, these people were, they would count as homeless people doubling up in apartments, as well as people who are in the shelters, mm-hmm. were counted in those figures.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not as familiar with the family situation, with domestic abuse situation. We're part of the homeless coalition, and we have people that we come in contact with who are involved with that. My area of focus has been the single men and single women on the streets.
Now, the ACLU, who referred me to you, actually, have filed for a lawsuit to stop the practices of Mayor, what's his name?
Mayor Goodman is the mayor of Las Vegas, and we have gone to federal court twice, with the last time with the ACLU's help, the previous time with the help of a local attorney here, with the claim that the constitutional rights of the homeless have been violated.
And what was the reaction of the federal court on the prior?
We've lost so far, although the last time we were in federal court, the judge said he would expect to see us back should the clearing of the Four Master Street be done without respect to the rights of the homeless there. And those of us who witnessed what occurred that day, we were appalled. It was the Christian day of Palm Sunday, and the men and women were rousted very early in the morning from their from where they had been living for quite a few months. And then many of them, about half of the 200 people, went to a vacant lot on about four blocks away. They set up their shanties with the help of a lot of people trying to assist them, because the weather was turning bad that day. It turned out to be a real cold, windy, wet day, unusual for Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
And in the midst of that, they set the shanties up. They had some security from the elements, and then the city came with their forces and wiped that encampment out. So twice in one day, or actually twice in one morning, about 100 homeless people were rousted, not once but twice,
with all of
their possessions.
Was this the Israeli army? I'm sorry.
No, this was Las Vegas, Nevada. It was a sad day. And this community can be doing better.
Yeah, definitely. So where are those people that were rousted now? What are they doing?
Well, one of the encampments that formed was the one where we got a porta potty up, and then there's about 30 homeless people from that other encampment it was called A Street, and so we were able to get a porta potty up there for about a week or just over a week, and then the city quickly had it removed by the threat of they would take the porta potty company's porta potty away and destroy it.
Yeah, we've had similar kind of hostility toward porta potties for our Camp Paradise here in Santa Cruz.
I'd like to know more about Camp Paradise. I've been through Santa Cruz.
Yeah, but in fact, I talked to you earlier, and I would love to see perhaps one of the Lichtensteins, or I guess you mentioned there's another woman who's been working with the homeless there, come from Las Vegas to kind of bring a couple of homeless folks to join this encampment summit. We call it a Right to Sleep Summit happening May
4th. I'm really happy to hear that that's happening. That kind of networking would be helpful. I think it would be helpful for those of us working with the homeless to know what is going on in various cities.
Uh-huh. Well, I know that I was looking at Las Vegas like a decade ago, and there was some horrible stuff coming out of it then. We were working on a lawsuit back in 1992 in California called the Seven Cities Lawsuit to overturn sleeping bans as unconstitutional violations of the right to travel, cruel and unusual punishment, and violations of due process and equal treatment under the law.
What came out of that?
We got a bad, good decision at the medium level, bad decision at the Supreme Court level, but we did get a good decision eventually of a sort. Didn't hold the camping and sleeping bans unconstitutional, but it held that if there is a camping law, and this is in the ICORN case, and this was a state California case, the necessity defense, which almost every state has an equivalent, is mandatory as an option for people trying to defend themselves. So that...
Are you still familiar with the Pottinger case in Florida?
I am, and that, of course, for our listeners, is the 1998 settlement, which requires police to have a shelter bed before they even approach a homeless person on a so-called life-sustaining misdemeanor.
It's just common sense. If a person's got nowhere place to go, you can't arrest them for existing and taking up space.
Exactly, and what kind of reaction have you gotten from the media and the churches on this issue?
We've had a lot of coverage in the media, and we've got some support. We had a we have a petition that we're gathering some signatures. I've got 6 or 7 Catholic pastors. We've got some Episcopalian priests who've signed on. Part of the problem, with the reason we don't have more is we are so stretched. We're trying to get so much done protecting porta potties and getting water to the encampments. And we have a woman here locally who's very active, and she goes to all the campsites that she knows of. And she's more than anybody, she knows where the campsites are. And you had asked the question previously, where have the people gone? Basically, they've scattered to other campsites, smaller in number.
Mm-hmm.
And throughout most of the Las Vegas Valley, the homeless have to stay hidden. The unusual piece has been in the homeless corridor area, which is about a 5-square-block area where most of the services are, and that's what was unusual about the street encampments, that they were visible.
How much is large corporate businesses like the casinos and, dare I say it, underworld figures involved in, you know, how much is corporate America involved in trying to sweep away the homeless here?
There's no direct evidence, but, you know, I've been here for 5 years, and it would, you know, certainly they would have a concern of not wanting homeless people going into the tourist areas, and you know almost anybody can see why. But then they should be doing their fair share to make sure that you have facilities available for the people. If they're forced to wander the streets, then you can't harass them while they're taking up space and living, doing life sustaining activities, like you quoted the Pottinger case.
Well, you know, I read the Las Vegas Sun how there was a successful case last year about political protesters outside one of the casinos, and
we are very grateful, and again, the ACLU was a big support. We were able to get some homeless advocates out there, along with some homeless people themselves, and thanks to the protection of the ACLU for our right of free speech, we were able to be out in front of the MGM Grand, right out in front of their Lion, mm-hmm. and as well as in front of other casinos, and we were able to have our protest and our vigil. Yeah, but again, there was no positive response from the large mega casinos. These, I don't know if you're familiar, but the MGM Grand, for example, we focused on them because they're the largest. But they're not just the one entity. They own about 5 or 6 of the major casinos on the Strip. Mm-hmm. So you've really got these multinational mega casinos coming in billion-dollar industries, and they're not doing their fair share in this community. They could be doing a lot more.
So what's the next step? Are there any leaders coming out of the homeless community that are kind of working on? I know, in, for example, Portland, Oregon, Dignity Village, you may be familiar with, has actually for a year and a half sustained itself, and it was illegal. It's still, I guess, illegal, although last summer Portland legalized it. We're talking with Brother David in Las Vegas, and it's time for my show to end here, and I appreciate your calling in.
Maybe I apologize for calling so late.
Hey, maybe we can catch it again on Sunday. Our show runs from 10 to 1:30 in the afternoon, and perhaps you can get back to us at that time and give us a fuller report.
I will in the future. My one problem, I have to leave town. My mom is battling cancer, so I ask for prayers and good wishes from all your listeners.
Definitely.
For my mom, who's got a serious cancer battle going on right now.
I hear you, and good luck with her.
When I get back, I'll be happy to come back again.
Hey, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
That about wraps it up for Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Uncle Dennis is next with From the Cream to the Dregs. I don't wish to suggest that that's my show, From the Cream to the Dregs, his show, certainly not. Rather, that indicates wide subject matter that he's going to be talking about. In fact, between times, call in to the Huff line, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, 423-HUFF. Join me again on Sunday when I will be returning. And tomorrow, I encourage people to come to the Peace Walk, the Raising Signs for Peace at the corner of Water and Ocean Streets. That's going to be happening between 5 and 6, and then, of course, coming to the protest on April 20th, 9 a.m., there will be vehicles leaving from the town clock, I believe. I hope I'm not wrong on this. I know there is a caravan. I think it's leaving from the town clock. Dennis, are you ready to zip in a disc, or do you want me to keep babbling?
Well, babble on.
All right. Well, this is Babylon. I will Babylon.
We'll get something.
All righty. No problem. I do appreciate your calling in, and I remind you, I need you to fill out declarations. What are they? Well, they're simply short narratives that talk about your feeling essentially intimidated by city council behavior against other people. So get in touch with me at 423-HUFF, and come on back to me on Sunday, and I will be hopefully seeing you also at the Earth Day at San Lorenzo Park.
You ready, Dennis? Looks like you are. Thanks a lot, and see you then.